Welcome, everybody, to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, sponsored by Prediction Strike. Recording on Tuesday evening, April the 18th, and released on the 19th, the Wednesday. I'm your host, Vlad Sedler. You can find me at RotoGut on Twitter. Unfortunately, Maddie is not going to join us today at Maddie Wood, but I do have a special guest co-host. He's been on a couple of podcasts this year, been on a little bit of a tour. He's a longtime NFBC player, very good, a high-stakes guy, and a lawyer by trade, a huge fan of the Angels, both through the good times and bad, and a very opinionated gentleman. And before the show, he did mention sometimes surly, but that's okay. We don't mind the surly here, especially when it comes to fantasy baseball analysis. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him on Twitter at StudSterkelFan. That's StudSterkel fan. It's Daniel Preppis. What's going on, Daniel?
Hey, Vlad, thanks a lot for having me. I know I've been, I don't want to say begging, but close to it to let me co-host with you. So I thought I was going to have to wait a while. So appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, man. And, you know, obviously don't usually have just anyone. Usually it's, you know, it's Maddie and I. But, you know, I know you and I have talked the fantasy game for a long time. I respect your style and, you know, your gamesmanship in the NFBC, and obviously I've heard you on a couple of podcasts, so you know, obviously you do a great job, so I think we will have a nice little show here. So we'll talk about a bunch of different things. We'll talk about things going on around the league, injuries and such, kind of the state of the game now, and of course a little bit of Angels. But first I wanted to ask you, when did you start drafting for this season? Like, did you get into the Gladiators, the DCs? What did you end up doing for your mix of teams this season?
I hate answering that question because it's always something I'm a little ashamed of, but I was really trying to make it to November before I did. And I almost did, but I did my first Gladiator at the end of October. I only did three of them. Because I wanted to jump into the DCs pretty quickly. Each year I play out, I like to try to get the DCs earlier and earlier, obviously to get some of those deals, particularly some of the rookies that I think are going to come into spring training and kind of, you know, get that rookie hype, shiny new toy, like to get them kind of in the last five rounds. So, yeah, DCs mostly November to February. And then obviously, always like to do a handful of OCs and then, two mains.
Nice. Nice. And you've partnered with different people in the past. I know I've partnered as well. What percentage of your teams are solo and what percentage are partner? I know you work with, Ryan Venancio, right? Last couple seasons.
Yeah. Me and him, last two seasons have teamed up. A couple seasons before I've, teamed up with David Asanapour, really good player.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's in my main this year, which sucks. But I would say, I want to say probably about 15 to 20%. Ryan and I did one of those tag team satellites. I didn't realize it's been going on for a while. But we got to play in that this year with a bunch of people from the industry and people that are NFBC vets. We did one main together. And then one online championship together, which I believe is in a league with you, the one that we did.
Yeah, that's right. I know you guys beat me in a Beat Vlad OC last season. I don't know if you, actually, I'm not sure if you were in on that team. I know Ryan was, so he had a really good season last year. And by the way, he's kind of a little surlier on Twitter. Is that in because of you? Is that you sort of rubbed off?
No. I think that's probably one of the reasons we get along. We both get pissed off at other people easily. No, I'm kidding. He's a confident guy, and as he should be. I'm using confidence as a euphemism there, but yeah, he can get into it. I would say because he knows more than me about some of the stats that he's highly opinionated. He's a huge dynasty guy, so when he's on a prospect, it's usually a really good sign. I want to say last year, he was all about Bryson Stott and Juan Yepes early. And I, at first with Stott, I was like, who? And then, you know, looking more at him, watching his profile, obviously what he's doing this year is amazing, but He's usually got a very good eye for prospects. So he's a fun guy to team up with because he's still getting into the NFBC swing of things. So it's a good compliment. He knows players. I would say I'm a little bit better at kind of reading the draft board, although Vegas Live Main was an interesting story about that. Yeah. That's probably my worst draft and most uncharacteristic style I think I've ever done, NFBC or otherwise. So it was interesting.
Was it this year or last year where there was like a glaring guy that had fallen in your first round and you sort of missed it because you were zoned in?
So what happened was, I guess it was a sign of things to come. Maybe I should, I don't know, find something to calm me down before the draft. But I really wanted Robert was my first choice. My second choice was DeGrom.
This is last year.
This is last year. Sorry, yeah. This is 2022. And then my third choice was probably going to be, I'm not sure, honestly, in retrospect. I think I was thinking of Albies in the first round. But what happened was Robert got sniped right before me. And so right at that point, I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, I don't want to take DeGrom. So I just yelled out Trout, which means lesson for people that have ever doing a live main. Take your time. Take 10 seconds to think before you pick. Because I didn't do that, and Otani was still on the board.
Oh.
And that was a pretty bad miss. Obviously, I didn't expect it. You know, nobody else was taking him. So really no excuse. But as soon as I did it, I was like, wow, DeGrom and Otani were on there. Cool. That went well. So
how are you with Otani this year? Was he a target for you? Where were you looking to get him this season, if at all, in the first round?
He was a big target. I kind of had him, I want to say, in the middle of the first round, meaning as soon as the big guys off the board, you know, Tucker being the last one, I thought he was the clear number seven pick. And I know this will sound like a little bit of hindsight, but it's the honest to God's truth. I wanted to take him primarily as a pitcher. I know most people realized or heard early on that they were going to have him pitch twice a week a couple of times. But for me, the reason why I looked at him as a pitcher is because, A, he stopped stealing. And it was a pretty clear sign that he stopped stealing, and I didn't want to gamble in terms of valuing him as a hitter based on steals. But the bigger reason was when I looked at his profile and his pitching, and I kind of eliminated that bias of the, I thought it was a bias of automatic six-man rotation up in the air. I just didn't think to read anything into that at the time. And I looked at it and I said, if he was just a pitcher, you know, I think he would go in the early third round, maybe higher in a main if he gets pushed up. And so I just figured he could very well be a first-round pitcher next year if he got to 180 or 190 innings. And it's Otani. Like, every year he's going to get babied less and less, right? He does what he wants. And so that's kind of how I justified it. It's not a bad pick as a pitcher in the second round. And I'll give him that little bump because of the flexibility of being a hitter. Maybe that was more of a DC focus to have that flexibility, but I definitely have been looking at him as a pitcher this year. He was so good last year as a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he was excellent. Obviously, a cheat code for, you know, daily leagues and points leagues and right. of the sort. And a lot of high stakes folks, a lot of very sharp players were in on him this year. So that was very, very interesting. Yeah, I've got a little bit of Otani as well. And yeah, have been using him a little bit more at pitcher so far this year. But I think I'm kind of flexible. Just kind of depends on the lineup. Mm-hmm. Funny, my very first DC, I think I've only timed out once in all of my DCs. And that first one in December, I got Otani in the first round. And then I forgot, it was like 10, you know, whatever, 12 rounds later. And I got JD Martinez auto-drafted to me. So kind of works out. I mean, not that JD has been hitting all that well, but, you know, and that's a problem. Ironically, I did the same thing last year. My one timeout was getting Stanton on an Otani team. So that was a little bit tougher. Well, it's never tough when Stanton spends half the year on IL. So
right.
You know, then you do have that flexibility. But okay. So flag plants real quick. Wanted to ask you kind of who your big hits were, or at least, you know, early on in the year. And I myself, I, I, I feel good about the start of the season. My super auction, the auction, basically my first one in about 5 years. It was fun. I planned it out and I really kind of attacked the plan, pivoted a little bit. I did realize that I wanted to get an Acuna, Judge, or Julio as, you know, as my one pick, or no, my first guy, expensive guy around $45. Didn't really plan on Bo Bichette, but I ended up getting him as well at 40, Luis Robert at 24, and happy with my pitchers for the most part. But what I'm really happy with is I was able to sort of pick pocket the exact guys that I wanted later on. And so far, a lot of these guys have been hot. Some of them I even got in the reserve round, but, you know, Yandy Diaz for one, you know, all those Rays, really. Josh Lowe, James Altman I got in the reserve rounds, you know, Garrett Mitchell for a couple dollars. He still really hasn't heated it up. And that team's off to a really good start. I would obviously, you know, it's early. I don't want to say much about it, but I would love to win that league. But for the most part, a lot of my late round guys and sort of the thesis of, hey, there's a lot of great outfielders available later. And I remember there were just pockets in that draft where, remember like that 150 to 200 range, like where I just wasn't interested in those guys. All the, you know, Newt Bars, Bellingers, Yoshida's, like they were okay. You know, Brandon
overhyped. Nino.
Yeah, but I was like, you know, 100 picks later, 150 picks later, there are guys that are always going to come up. You know, Jose Siri was another one that came on. So just, you know, I mean, the Rays in general. So really happy with that start. Obviously, pitching has been an absolute shit show, it feels like, across the board. Yeah. But who were your flag plants hitting and pitching wise, and what how have they worked out for you so far?
Well, I think as far as I had more flag plants at hitting. Than I did at pitching. So far, I would say the hitter flag plants are working okay. Pretty much had Paredes and Villar, I want to say, in most leagues. Ward, everybody likes Ward. And again, not kind of a bold call, but I just looked at Franco all offseason, and it reminded me of when Vlad was a rookie, or I want to say he went like around 40 or 50. And Wander in his rookie year kind of went maybe a little later, right, 50 to 70, something like that. Mm-hmm. And this year he's going 85 to 90, and he was hurt last year, and he was 21 years old. I mean, I just thought it was like the most nonsensical, you know, it wasn't even post-type sleeper. It was like he was injured. And so I thought that getting him, you could get him early in the, I want to say around pick 100. So I tried to get as much of him as I could. Those were kind of my three big hitters I looked at. I like Garrett Mitchell a lot. He was an early one. I liked Verdugo a lot. I thought he was going to be a nice value this year. So the hitting's working okay, I would say. And then on the pitching side, Eovaldi was kind of a pretty big target. I know a couple years ago he was in the mid 150s. And I thought his price being around 220, 250 was kind of a layup with his profile, with his whip. So he was a good guy, and Detmers, all off season, kind of everything I know about the guy, everything I looked at, everything I read about him, I just said, you know, people want to get the starters that have 10K plus a game upside. And he really jumped out at me as a guy that could provide that. Whip may be the only weakness, and everything else being really, really, really good. And I thought he should have been going around pick one, where he actually ended up going in the main, maybe a little high in the 130 to 140. But I think you got him in one of our drafts at like 210 or 215. So he was, yeah, he was a big target. And I don't even think it's a homerism thing, because everybody jumped on him late as well. So he was probably my biggest pitching target.
Nice, nice. How do you feel about and how do you respond to the spring training phenomenons, the pitchers that come up, and sometimes they're in a big market where they really get pushed up? And there was something going on in this draft season that made me almost make emotional decisions against, and it has panned out. And I'm talking about a specific player. It has panned out, but the reason why I did it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Clark Schmidt Helium, and I swear I'm not just doing it because he's getting blasted, but I did not get why he was getting pushed up to the early 200s. I understand he's a Yankee, he was going to be in the rotation, and there's always like a little bit of a Yankee tax, but I just, out of principle, could not do it. I was like, I'm going to let this guy burn. Just like, if he beats me, so be it. There's a million pitchers in the pool, enough guys that I like. I'm not going to bite here on this. And I feel like I've kind of been taking an old man's yelling at clouds tactic with certain guys. I mean, if you recall, I had the take on Volpe where I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to, you know, there's a price where if I wanted him, I should have been taking him, you know, in the 200s, 300s earlier in draft season. I'm not going to pay a top 120 overall price for him. And obviously, you know, could steal a lot of bases and could be solid. You know, jury's still out on all that. But yeah, I mean, how are you affected by the spring training stuff when everybody starts pushing everyone up, especially on those big market teams and pitchers that have that increase in velocity in the spring and get a rotation spot?
When you were saying that you were right, but not for the right reasons, I kind of disagree with that. I think you're not giving yourself credit. I kind of looked at it similarly, and I think mine was the wrong reason, which was I would have the kind of bias of, especially with Clark Schmidt, of I was getting him in the 500s, right? I only think I had like two shares. I'm not paying half that price for spring training hype. So I don't know if that's the right logic, but I guess maybe it was, right? If a guy's going to jump that much in ADP and you ask yourself, why is he? And, you know, when you were saying I wasn't buying into the hype, I think we should flip it around. Why should we buy into the hype? What is the, is it just because Montas was hurt and he has a starting job? I mean, that's a crazy premium to have a Yankees rotation spot. And to me, that's the only real explanation. And if people are hyping up that, call it the hype based on the rotation spot, that's already an irrational hype. And so I think that people are going to look for any type of confirmation to justify that. So I think it was the timing of after the Montas and Rodon announcement. I'm not looking at the box scores, but I'm pretty sure he had some, you know, 7K, 8K games. I think the first start after he was kind of rolling with a perfect game. And I honestly believe that fueled a lot of the hype, the timing of his good spring performances.
Yeah. And there's obviously there's a lot of dividends to pay to being a lone wolf in terms of making your own decisions and having your own opinions on players. And obviously it doesn't always work out, but it's really dangerous to kind of feel like that strong FOMO. It's like, man, everybody's pushing them up. What do they know that I don't? And sometimes you just have to stand strong. And obviously I can pick up, find examples that it worked the other way, but you kind of have to stick to a process in that preseason. And it's addictive, right? I mean, you start to see really good players, smart players going and getting in on that. And of course you're thinking, maybe I'm missing out. Maybe I should get in on it. Not to mention Clark Schmidt was a decent prospect. I mean, he would have worked out. I didn't think he'd be this bad, right? I mean, thought he'd at least be decent.
Well, yeah.
But it's also in comparison to the players in that range. Like, all of a sudden he's going in the, I mean, right, in the Eovaldi range.
Stroman, same range.
Yeah, right. So now it starts to get pushed up. So it's always a comparison of what you're looking up against, right? The other players in that range.
Yeah, and the other thing I remember looking at Schmidt is he really didn't have a lot of, performance track record as a starter. He did really well in the bullpen, and it was still a question mark whether he was going to work as a starter, or at least I thought that, whereas Domingo Germán, you know, not great, had the other issues, but had flashed as a starter. I don't get it. And I think looking back, if people want to say, well, people don't want to admit that they're getting caught up in hype, right? Nobody wants to admit to that, especially now. So I think a good rule of thumb is if you see a guy climbing up the boards, like, you know, a Schmidt, a Wesneski, and if you weren't on him before, I think you have to ask yourself, am I just doing it because I'm afraid of missing out and I'm just following the crowd? And I think there's nothing wrong with doing that once in a lower stake draft, meaning if you're going to do it, don't do it for the first time in one of your bigger drafts, you know, get one under your belt. I know Chris List likes to say a lot, this is my FOMO draft, Erickson too. So if you want a guy, you want to pay up for the hype, have one FOMO draft and try not to make it your biggest draft. And I think that's a good way to at least try to check yourself in a way that you're not going to have to, you know, I want to say,
question yourself later, right?
What'd you say?
Well, regret it later because you have been avoiding a certain player all through draft season. Now the price is up. You weren't necessarily on them. It's your biggest draft, and you just made a split second decision to draft them, you know, live when it's already a sort of a tense environment. It's tough. It's a really tough spot to be in.
And I think you have to be honest about, you know, you have to be willing to look at yourself honestly. You know, you're afraid of other people judging you. You know, this would be one of the areas where it's okay to judge yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think to that end, in terms of, well, I don't want to be too hard on myself. Are you the kind of player where you like to not only have other people provide the research? I'm one of those. But do you like to kind of try to shadow good players with good track records? You know, the classic one being Phil Dussault. You know, who's he picking? I won't name names, but there's a lot of drafters that, you know, pick other players because they think good players are taking him. So the reason I mentioned that with be honest with yourself is if you're one of those players and you see a guy jumping up in hype, I think you're going to be more vulnerable to that. If you're a guy that doesn't really provide your own projections or trust your own numbers. And so that's another kind of self-awareness thing to say, wait a minute, if I'm already the kind of guy that likes to pick, you know, shadow and take other people's players, I'm going to be more prone to that spring training hype, you know, that Twitter echo chamber hype. And I think that that's a good way to kind of maybe catch yourself in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really good way to break it down. So let's talk a little bit about the, you know, what's going on in the league and things like that. Wanted to just kind of glance at a few offensive lineups and how it may help us sort of figure out how injuries or playing time might be affected on certain rosters. So I just wanted to start off with the Yankees and Giancarlo Stanton, grade 2 hamstring. He's going to be out at least 6 weeks. This is a guy that I grabbed a lot of when I had my little period of time of DCs in January, February, where he was like 160 overall. I'm like, this is unfair. This isn't right. If he is healthy, I'm going to make 100 pick profit. This is easy profit here. For whatever reason, things kind of flipped before my important draft. So I ended up with no Stanton in any of my bigger drafts. Mostly not that I wouldn't have taken him. It's just that there was always somebody taking him way early, like way ahead of ADP, right? Mm-hmm. But anyways, it happened again. Some of us still don't learn our lessons. And those that did learn those lessons years ago are, you know, they're giving us the waving the finger at us. Like, I told you. Because hey, this is Stanton. This is what happens. But anyways, you've got Harrison Bader on his way back soon. You know that Franchi Cordero, he's been earning some good playing time, playing primarily against righties. Aaron Hicks playing a little bit. He looks to me at least like he is dust. So Bader will obviously be a welcomed addition to this lineup. But I don't know, man. It's not necessarily a scary one. It's not someone a lineup that like outside of those top guys. Judge, Rizzo, it just doesn't look as scary, right? And then now you've got Josh Donaldson, who could also be dust. He's supposed to be activated on Wednesday, which means most likely Oswald Peraza, the rookie shortstop, is going to be sent down. And you still got IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa in that lineup. But how do you foresee the things playing out for Franchi Cordero specifically? Like, are people justified in the money that they've spent on him over the last couple of weeks? And just how do you see the Yankees looking over the next couple months?
They are, just hearing you talk, it is scary that not only are they not really that intimidating of a lineup, but, you know, you hate to say it, but Stanton could be the first domino. And wait, he wasn't the first domino. Bader was the first domino. Look at all those guys you named. Hicks. Does he ever stay healthy? No. Donaldson at this age, you know, not good. And Rizzo, right? I mean, he's kind of an iron man, but back issues don't go away. I think as far as the Yankees go, I think that we're going to see maybe more in years past, a lot more shuffling of the lineup. Guys getting called up for that reason, that they're not really strong. So I think Franchi's a streaky guy. You know, what is he? This year's Matt Carpenter. So I think as long as he's hitting, he'll stay. There's no reason that he won't. And I'm interested to see what they do with Peraza, because when I looked at the lineup today and I saw that Torres was the DH, LeMahieu was third base, all of a sudden he's kind of one of their healthiest guys, and that's also scary. And so I'm wondering if there's a chance that Peraza stays up, maybe doesn't play every day, but gets some starts at second base. Maybe they put Torres at DH because he's kind of one of their best hitters, and makes sense to kind of protect him a little bit. And both Volpe and Peraza are great on defense. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Peraza. But as far as the Yankees, you kind of got to think that they're going to want to trade for somebody, because I don't see that lineup, even with some health, being able to do damage in the playoffs, especially with how amazing the AL East looks this year.
It feels off. It really does. And I'm sorry, Yankees fans that are listening, but your rotation is shot. I understand Gerrit Cole is an ace, looks like the best pitcher in baseball. I know Domingo Herman just hit his career high in strikeouts. Very interesting. And Nestor Cortez is still solid, but it's really shaky. I mean, they're even the bullpen, I understand they're still waiting for a couple of guys to come back. Tommy Conley, Scott Efros will be back eventually. He had Tommy John, but like, they're just a bunch of guys in this bullpen that I hardly know. There was a guy that came up, Greg Weissert, a 18th round pick from 2016. I mean, he Jimmy Cordero, like, who are these guys? And so I don't know, like, you got the Rays and the Blue Jays surging in this division. It's good. I mean, I don't want to say like a rebuild for the Yankees, but like, God forbid, at least for my sake, because I do need Carlos Rodon to be back. And I'm tired of these, you know, constant, oh, now the back hurts and this, just, I need him back. But regardless of that, if something doesn't work out with him and or Severino setback, like, this team is really in trouble. And I don't even know, like, will trades even do anything? I understand the record's up there. They're hanging in there. But I don't know. I don't see how they win in this division. The Rays seem like a clearly better team to me, even with the loss of Jeffrey Springs. And the Blue Jays are far superior as far as I'm concerned.
No, I agree. And, you know, we still don't know. You know, I know Severino's throwing bullpens, but, I mean, there's no guarantee he's going to be effective when he comes back. Same thing with Rodon. You know, if he doesn't get back until the end of May, both those guys, you know, they almost have to be crushing from the get-go, because at this point, I think it's just a matter of time before that record goes down, like you say. And it might not be one of those things where they have to make a choice of whether or not to make some deals. They may be out of it, because – to your point, I just don't think they're necessarily a good team right now with all the pitcher injuries and the hitting as it is. So it's just, the more we talk about it, I really don't think they're a good team. They're not a playoff team, I don't think.
Speaking of potential playoff teams in their division, the Tampa Bay Rays, I've been obsessed with this lineup this preseason, and I got to admit, some of it was biased by early season schedule. Granted, I had no idea they were going to go on a 13-0, whatever it was, streak. But they had the best perfect early streaming schedule for their hitters. And we always know that this offense is their, I mean, they're not keeping you on your toes at the lineup, because you pretty much kind of know what's going to happen. You know, Paredes is going to hit higher in the lineup against lefties. You know, Josh Lowe, Luke Rayleigh are going to sit against lefties. Jose Siri, when he's back, he'll hit lefties. The lineup is somewhat predictable. There's obviously a little bit of things that are different sometimes. Harold Ramirez will, you know, he's been hitting great, right? He's a good contact hitter, but sometimes he'll play corner outfield. Sometimes he'll DH. You don't know whether he'll hit against a lefty or a righty, because he hits both. Same with Manuel Margot. Doesn't necessarily have a platoon split. I believe he's decent defensively, can cover center field, the corners. So this is, I love the way they mix and match, and much better for real life than fantasy. But and of course, you know, Yandy Diaz leading off, playing every day. Brandon Lau hitting second against right-handers. Arizarena and Franco just locked in. Just, there was just some sort of little obsession I had about this team, and some of it had to do with prices on these guys. The fact that they were so cheap and so easily available, And this is something I look for every draft season. I think back, I forgot what year it was. It was like 2015, I think. But I remember this is kind of when I first started it, when I noticed the Arizona Diamondbacks at that year, I remembered, they had a lot of guys that I could see surging. Like they could collectively sort of work out. And I remember it was like Adam Eaton, David Peralta, AJ Pollock in his career year. Like all these guys were cheap in drafts and I could load them up. And if things worked well, I could have a, you know, helpful to my season. And that's something I'm always looking for in teams and when I'm doing my analysis. And that's kind of what I saw with the Rays here. Could obviously go so many different ways, but I like what I'm seeing here. I would love, you know, Josh Lowe. I don't even know if I really need him to be hitting against lefties or whatever, but I mean, just so many things I love on this team and I just hope it keeps going.
No, I agree. I got in a big league. I got one share of Yandy and I'm kicking myself like everybody else. Because it was obvious early on that the smartest players out there were grabbing them. And I just honestly, I missed it because, I mean, if he fixed his launch angle, I mean, you want to talk about how scary that team is. I mean he's an all-star and then some. I mean, he's really good. And anybody that took him has got to be loving life right now. What does he have, 5 homers now?
Yeah. I mean he hit a 3-run bomb as we were recording.
Yeah, I mean, he's a 300 hitter now, so he's going to hit 300 with at least 25 bombs. That doesn't seem unreasonable. And that the whole team. And, hey, you know, for all the talk I said about Paredes being better than anybody else at third, now Taylor Walls has the same number of his home runs as him. He's got 3. He had 2 today.
Taylor Walls just had a career game. Every time he was up on the plate this Tuesday we were recording, just insane. And what just magic, right? I mean, it's a good team. I mean, obviously, other than the whole Springs roller coaster.
But momentum is momentum, right? You can't quantify everything. And it is very clear that they've got something this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost Springs.
Todd Bradley steps up like nothing. Like it's nothing.
Like it's nothing. And then you want to talk about guys that could come up. Manzardo's a beast. He could very well come up and, you know, force his way in there being a full-time DH. Curtis Mead is a really good player as well. So kind of to that point where you talk about, it just seems like of any other team, big injuries are not going to affect these guys. I think they got staying power. I think they're easily a 100 win team and, good for you for being all about them because, only guy I was on really was Paredes and the rest of the guys. A Rosarena is obviously great. He's a great player as well. But Yandy, man, Josh Lowe is just killing it. To your point, it's like, who cares if he sits versus one lefty a week? His numbers against righties are insane. I mean, he's barreling up everything. He looks like better than people even thought he was going to be last year.
And with things like that, because, I mean, I do get those player, you know, those roto crushes, right? It's a guy that you know you shouldn't. And, of course, you know, I have my very conservative in terms of fantasy and just being a lot more risk averse friends like Rob Silver and Scott Gentstad, who are just sometimes, you know, the angel on my shoulder being like, reminding me that, hey, Josh Lowe, remember last year, the dude, all he did was strike out. He looked so bad.
Yeah.
And always in my mind, I'm remembering this, but then you start to see those gains, right? You saw that in the spring. He's barreling everything. He's striking out less. We saw the same thing with Jared Kelnick. Like these guys that have hype that were just not hitting at their first kind of turn in the majors. These guys were big prospects hitting everything their entire lives from little league to, you know, high school in the minors. And then they just had this little period of time. People forget about them or they're less interested. Market price goes down on them. And then boom, just everything hits. And of course, this isn't to say that Joshua could lose it all again or Kelnick or things don't work out for them for the most part all year, but it's looking good so far.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a theme there, right? Like everybody had given up on Kelnick and, you know, now he does this. You really have to look at it is instead of saying somebody's like a post-hype sleeper, post-hype, it's just to remind yourself that it's a really, really, really hard game. And it's really rare for a guy to come up and smash right away. You know, the Vinny Pasquantinos, I'm trying to think who was Julio Rodriguez. Those are the rare guys. So it's almost like you have to put yourself in a mindset of who were the guys that were pretty big hyped and either didn't do anything or didn't do as well as we thought. Those are the guys to invest in. They almost make more sense to gamble on than the shiny new toys. Like, it's better to take risks on guys, I think, like the Josh Lowe's, because the prices are going to be better because it has that kind of no longer shiny new toy. And if you think about it, it makes more sense that they're going to pop after having struggled for a bit. At least it does to me.
And to the point about Wander Franco, so that's another interesting one, because I don't know if you remember, like, I had a very strong opinion the Vlad Guerrero breakout year, and
you did.
And I fought people on Twitter. I would just, you know, just it felt, I felt it in my freaking bones. And there would have been a good reason to have that for Wander Franco, but you hear enough people saying, well, the power, right? And it just may not get there in the ballpark. And you just start to think about things, and there, he's not, you know, maybe he's better real life player than fantasy, right? All these things. And then, but there's always that possibility, right? The guys with those skill levels, a guy that can hit 290 with ease, and then in the middle of the good lineup, you know, good context and everything going right, and he's finally healthy, those kind of things could work out. You had the Wander Franco people that were really in on him, right? There's, it's, you know, you got that bell curve. You got people really in on him, people that were way out, and then everybody else was kind of like, I don't know, right? The problem also with Wander Franco this year were the other shortstops in the range. It was like this smorgasbord of good options. It was Willy Adames. It was Dansby Swanson. It was Tim Anderson. It was Xander Bogaerts. There were good cases to be made for all those guys. So that was one of the other reasons I think Franco got lost in the shuffle there.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, but that makes sense. Yeah.
Real quick on the Astros. So Chaz McCormick, he's, I think it was vision issues, or at least it was last week. I don't know if that's what it is that has.
No, it was, I think it was his back. So he's got two problems now. I think he went on with something else.
Okay. So he's out for a bit. You got, triple eligible Mauricio Dubon, not going to hit for obviously for power, but he's been leading off and he's been actually doing pretty well. You've got Jake Myers near the bottom of the lineup. He's been hitting well. Corey Jukes, right? This is, we got this guy from minor league land. When somebody brought him to my radar, I was like, holy shit, this guy has been mashing in the minors, man. I'm rooting for this guy. I really want to, you know, him to have a chance. And he's been looking pretty good too. And then of course you got that middle of the lineup, Yordan Alvarez, when healthy, is, you know, one of the best pure hitters in baseball. If not the, you've got Alex Bregman struggling. How's your overall opinion on this team? And also wanted to ask you what you think is, how do you think things are going to work out for Jose Abreu this year, especially he has no home runs so far?
I mean, he's got too good of a track record, I think, to write him off. I've never been a big Jose Abreu guy, but to me, there's no reason to think that he's not, even if he's not going to have, you know, more than 20 home runs, he's still going to get 100 RBIs in that lineup. So I think it's still a little too early to give up on him.
I agree.
Like I said, I think people are souring because he's never been a guy that people like taking because, oh, I don't know, he's slow and steady and always puts up numbers. So there's nothing to get excited about other than the numbers, to your point about old and boring. But he's in the middle of a perfect lineup and, you know, you've got Altuve that'll probably be back the first or second week of June. And it's a long season, right? If you think he's cold, bench him. And that's a sure way to get a 3-home run game out of him. And then and you get him going. So, I mean, come on, that's how it works. The fantasy world revolves around every single one of us in ways we don't want it to. So,
And by the way, really valuable that leadoff spot in Houston because you do have those big boys coming after you. And I understand Bregman's struggling, but they're him and he's basically number two over the last few years as far as walks to strikeout ratio. He's very good at very good plate patience, very, as we say, better in real life than fantasy. But him, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Jeremy Pena, it's a nice little middle of the lineup. Whoever's atop the lineup is going to succeed. And Dusty, I don't think Dusty Baker really needs, I mean, he's obviously not playing fantasy. He doesn't care. If Mauricio Dubon can get on base, Chaz McCormick was getting on base when he was there, like kind of put whoever there and it'll work out. But do you ever foresee, like say Dubon gets hurt or he struggles, and then, or just, you know, goes cold at the plate, and then say, you know, Chaz McCormick doesn't come back in time. Like, who kind of would be the next candidate? Would there ever be a chance that he put Pena up there atop the lineup? I know he did it a couple times, or Kyle Tucker is just an impossible thought atop, right?
I mean, I feel like Tucker at the top would make sense. I mean, I never understand why they put him there, but, you know, I'm not a coach. You know, Dusty got a World Series, so great for him. I still think he's a bad coach. I'm grateful for that 0-2 World Series. Yeah. Thank you, Dusty. I think the way that I look at the Astros is they're throwing everything in a mix and match because they're a completely different lineup without Altuve. I mean, he's one of the biggest difference makers, not just because of how great he is, but because he's at the top of the lineup and he sets the tone. And, you know, for the Angels or the Mariners or the Rangers, now's the time to pounce on the Astros. It's not just, oh, they're under 500 still. It's there's a reason they're not playing their, you know, off to the races like normal. No Altuve, no Verlander, and Presley's, he showed some kinks in the armor last year. It's showing again this year. I know they got a lot of arms, but every other team in that AL West, you got about 2 months to kind of get a lead on the Astros. They are more vulnerable this year. And I really think the pitching too. I was another guy that Ryan and I really liked last year, Javier. I had him on pretty much every team. Made Christian sure to bench Javier. Him. What'd you say, Christian Javier?
Christian Javier, yeah.
I made sure to bench him for his one hitter with 14 Ks against the Yankees because, you know, I felt it in my bones it was going to be good. So I do the opposite of the roto gut. Yeah, I don't think that staff is as strong as everybody thinks he is. I don't think Javier is an ace. I think he's a really good pitcher. I think Framber's the ace of that staff. I think he is a number one, but he's not an amazing number one. So I just don't see that staff as really that strong. I think just the whole team was already weaker this year, and that's why I say you throw that Altuve injury in. And probably one of the worst guys to get injured for that team. So, and to your point about Abreu, if he's not hitting, even if it takes him a month to get going, you could be looking at a team after another 2 weeks that's still not a 500 team.
Yeah, and it's fine. But I mean, obviously, it's a little bit of a tougher division. The things have changed a little bit. But yeah, very, very realistic for them. Wanted to mention or bring up a couple of guys and get your thoughts on them. Guys that have started off a little bit slow, but real quick, a word from our friends at our sponsor, Prediction Strike. Would you like to get in on the ground floor on a Josh Lowe or a James Outman? Well, Prediction Strike makes it a real possibility. It's the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game by investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use our code FTN, then deposit funds to buy, sell, or hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stocks. The value of the players change based upon game performance and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players anytime you want as long as the game isn't currently being played. So again, sign up with promo code FTN to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. PredictionStrike.com, promo code FTN. Three players I wanted to bring up to you, and I also want to touch on the weekend schedules, things like that. But your thoughts here. I was just kind of looking at, I do like to look at this because I do think sometimes it's predictive of, not always, but what may occur in the short term with certain players. Last week, I brought up to Maddie MJ Melendez, who was near the top of all the StatCast boards, but was hitting like 150. He's still hitting like 170 now, but he's got a few more hits, a few more RBI, kind of getting the ball rolling, so to speak. A couple of guys in similar situations, but one specifically stands out to me. It's Miguel Vargas of the Dodgers. You know, we had the little finger thing, so where he wasn't swinging in the spring. You just added the second base eligibility. And what I like to look at is the variance between actual stats and expected stats. So in his case, he so far this season has a 200 batting average, but a 305 expected batting average. Slugging is 300, expected is 500. WOBA is 337, XWOBA is a whole 100 points higher at 437, which is basically top 10 percentile in the league this year. He's got a 23% walk rate, great plate patience. Bad luck, BABIP is 258, but he hits the ball at a 40% clip. No home runs this year. Kind of feels like the drag in that lineup, but I don't know. I feel like he's one of those guys I think could get going soon.
Yeah, the thing that surprises me the most about him, and by the way, you know, fantasy baseball aside, it is incredible to watch his at-bats. I mean, his eye is just absolutely bonkers good. I mean, it looks like Trout up there watching pitches and knowing where they are. I'm really surprised he hasn't stolen yet. That's the biggest surprise to me, and I don't know the reason why, because I feel like in his lineup spot, it makes more sense to run. He's been stranded on the bases a ton this year, and if he's not hitting for power, I mean, there's got to be a reason for it, right? Because he's still a lot in the minors.
I was going to say, I think Dodgers, if I recall correctly, at least when I looked at it last week, are near the bottom.
That's what it is.
They have only two, if I'm not mistaken, only two stolen bases on the season, and they're both by James Outman. So,
well, of course, yeah. I got to give you credit on that one, by the way. Every early DC I was in, you constantly took him. And it was funny. I was like, Vlad's going to take him there. He didn't. Then I'd forget about him. So you got to be loving life right now, because I don't even want to know how many teams you have him on.
Yeah. And nice to see he's leading off. He's leading off this night. The game hasn't started yet while we're recording. So I'm in this phase now with him where I'm kind of keeping my expectations low, because it's natural for a hitter get off to such a hot start and then kind of cool off. But I like a lot of like stories about him. You know, obviously I watch Dodger, inside TV type stuff, or on our, our local broadcast about him. And there was a story about when he came to the first game, drove to the stadium. They drove in the car with him, Fox Studios or whatever, drove with him to the game, and how he was how do I put this? His approach to things is, he's not like wowed by anything. He's like, just takes everything very professionally. He's not like overly, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, he looks surprisingly comfortable. I mean, maybe that's because he's a little bit older. But I mean, he came up last year. He looked good. He had every reason to be confident coming in. And I remember thinking to myself, why isn't he getting a shot? And then they signed Hayward and Peralta, and he's still getting his shot. So, I mean, he's a mainstay. I hope you got some Rookie of the Year future bets on him, because he's looking like he's a candidate for that.
Very level-headed. That's kind of what I was looking at. I think that he mentioned, and it was the Dodgers backstage, what it was called, but he was mostly excited about, only a little glimpse of excitement is being able to park his car in the players' parking lot with everyone.
Yeah, that's a guy that stays within himself, right? Yeah. That talks like that. Oh, the one thing I wanted to mention, obviously this is more narrative based, but I liked a lot about Vargas looking at his profile. Just didn't think he was going to have a floor problem, because to your point, he really is a 300 hitter. But I did get it in the back of my head early on. Please don't be another James Loney. And with the start, it's kind of like, oh no, it's not another Loney, because the profiles are not crazy dissimilar. Because Loney was not a bad major league player, but there was just no power.
I remember he was like a 300 with like two homers kind of guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so I think to your point about Vargas, the average is going to come up. The steals is disconcerting. I didn't even think to look at that, but you're right. That makes all the sense in the world about the steals. But if the power's not there and the steals aren't there, it's not good, right? I mean, you almost need to see a little bit of a power surge to kind of make you feel somewhat comfortable. Mm-hmm. And Ryan and I took him, granted we pay him at second now, but we took him around 180. In our main, we were pretty stoked on it at the time, partly because we were counting on him for steals. So you don't want to be knee-jerk, but this is not a veteran. And a 300 hitter is a 300 hitter, but what else is he bringing to the table? So I hope I'm wrong, but I think of all the guys to kind of make an initial judgment, again, I think he's going to hit 300. I think the average is a non-issue, but everything else is looking kind of scary as far as zeros.
Yeah, and so what I think is you'll a guy that's hitting 200, and that's sort of the point here with Vargas is we're not even talking about the home runs or the stolen bases or even the fantasy value, just, you know, batting average. That was kind of my one concern. The reason why I didn't land on a lot of Miguel Vargas, it was literally because James Outman was always available 200 picks later, and I didn't see much of a difference. I know a little bit of a different profile, but it's like why Vargas keeps getting pushed up, and I understand he'll have second base at some point, and he's on the Dodgers and all these great things. He's a good average guy, but what if he's like, you know, Verdugo, but and then just has that one his rookie year off season, and he doesn't hit 300, it's like 270 or whatever with like eight home runs, and so that was kind of the thing in the back of my head.
And it also shows you that there's not much rhyme or reason to the logic of people saying, well, he's a better real life player than fantasy player. Vargas looks like he could be one of those guys, but nobody was saying that. I never heard one person.
No.
Or and the question I would have for you, Vlad, is why did it not matter for him? Is it the Dodgers premium? Is it because people didn't think he was going to break the lineup, and then all of a sudden he did, and all of a sudden he got second base, and it was like all these things together really created a recency bias with him that, you know, people, again, it's not logical, right? It's bias-based. So when you try to say why you pushed him up, you know, for me, it was the steals, right? That wasn't necessarily a great reason to push a guy up, especially this year. So we're all sensitive to it, but good on you that the Outman, you know, frame of reference kept it in check. Jealous.
We'll see again, right? I mean, we're middle of April, so you know, I'll take my little victory laps when I can, but then the reality of it hits me later on in this, you know, middle of the season. One more quick guy. Two actually. I'll just lump them together. Let me know your thoughts. One of them I'm not crazy about. I was not crazy about in drafts at all. Is another guy that price didn't make sense to me. That's Jose Miranda of the Minnesota Twins. Mm-hmm. He's off to a really slow start. Zero homers. Huge difference in all of his expected versus actuals. But you know, schedule warms up a little bit. They've got a nice little 10 game homestand. I feel like people overestimated because he was going to probably hit in the middle of the lineup, but it was also the first and third base. And it was kind of like maybe a dead zone with those guys. But it's like, I did not understand why he was going like ahead of Anthony Rizzo in some cases.
Yeah. And as somebody who liked him at the beginning, but, I'll give myself credit here. I kind of started to take a step back, and I got off him pretty quickly in December. I'll speak for myself because it wasn't really logical why I bumped him up. Is I looked at him and I said, he's shown power in the minors. It showed up late, but it takes a lot longer for it to show up. And that average being a 270 to 280 average, you look at that and you say, how many first basemen after, you know, Nate Lowe have that? And then you kind of get into that wish casting, right? Well, if he's going to hit 15, you know, and I believe in the power, why can't he get 20? And, you know, the unknown, right? And all of a sudden you're telling yourself, there's no reason he can't hit 20 to 25 with the 280 average. And then all of a sudden you're like, why do you think that? Is that all? Are you all basing it on the 280 and the fact that he showed power in one league? And that's what I'm saying. I personally speak for myself. I looked at that 280 average and I said, he's not going to only hit 15 home runs, but, you know, maybe if you actually looked at the numbers, there's no reason to think he was going to hit more than 15 home runs. So I think you're right. I think you're right to be off him. And even if he heats up, he was not a good pick before pick 200. He never was.
And some of those guys end up being the best deal. So I'm pointing him out because he is off to a slow start. I think everything looks fine. The only part I don't love is a 0.038 ISO.
Yeah.
It's a little worrisome, but this offense is just kind of struggling as a whole. I figure at some point Buxton and they'll just get going, right? They'll get healthier. I think Kirilloff and Polanco will really spark them. They'll be at home. I think those guys will come back during this homestand. So I think things will be a little bit better. So it's a case where, you know, maybe he gets dropped in a 12-teamer and then you scoop him up, you know, or in a trade. You just get, you know, just back something good.
Yeah.
One last guy, CJ Krohn. I just want to bring him up because he's got four homers on the season. I don't know what they're doing on this Tuesday night game. But three of those homers came in that first series against San Diego, and he's been really quiet since. He's dealt with the flu, missed a bit of time, but 20% barrel rate, average exit velocity is 2 miles per hour higher than the last few years. Big difference between his 70-point difference between his ex-WOBA and his WOBA, just almost 150 points difference in the slugging and ex-slug. So that's another guy I think could be interesting. A lot of these things come in waves, right? Like a guy.
He is streaky, man. He is super streaky. I mean, he's one of those guys that I've gotten to the point where he is what he is, because if I get lost in the X stats, I'm going to talk myself into him hitting 40 home runs in that park. I've done it before, probably three or four times. So there's no reason I won't do it again. So he's a guy that, you know, if you have him, I think you just got to stomach him and play him and just play him every day. And you don't, even though it's Coors, you got to be careful with a guy like that, because he's got such massive power that he's not going to just hit his home runs in Coors. I know the numbers last year reflected that, but I just don't think you get cute with a guy like that.
And we've had a soft spot for him because, like, we both wanted him to be like a monster angel guy, right? I mean, he was. Yep. We thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be awesome.
Yep.
He ended up pretty good, but yeah.
Yeah. Although I will say this, I believe we got Sandoval and Renjifo for him.
Wow.
So yeah, that's good. It ended up being a good move, even though we didn't like it at the time. Although Renjifo looks like shit this year. So
it's okay. Doesn't matter anymore. You guys got enough corners and middles. And real quick, your take on Zach Neto. And did you spend on him?
What'd you say?
And did you spend? Did you try to get him?
No, I got him in one league. I think the one league I have with Ryan, we bid like 50 and 25. He's another guy I hope I'm wrong on. I think he was brought up for defense at short. And I think the way to look at it from why the Angels brought it up, sure, they wanted lightning in the bottle. Renjifo can't play shortstop. Urshela can't play shortstop. With the shift, they needed somebody who could play shortstop who wasn't a wet noodle with a bat. And I love Fletcher, but yeah, not this year. Too good of a team. So I think they brought him up because they said the defense is going to be ready. He was smoking the ball in double A. So I think he's going to be a good player. I think he could very well hit 270 to 275, maybe a little bit of pop. But again, I hope I'm wrong with this, but I saw some of the bids in Maine and I just shook my head. I just said, did you actually look at him? Because he's the first guy to come up out of the draft, right? I'm pretty sure he's the first position player from the 2022 draft. He's got less minor league games under his belt than most people that come up, and he's a great player. He's going to be a good major league player, but I just do not see how you can bank on either power or speed. The Angels are another team, Vlad, like the Dodgers, that don't run. They just don't run. I don't look at it, but they got to be near the bottom. So if Neto's not getting you steals, and I have no reason to think the power is going to be anything other than below average. Like I said, I got one just for the heck of it, but hope I'm wrong. But when I saw people making bids over 100, I'm just like, you are just getting caught up with that's a lemming move. Hate to be a prick because
that's fine. I brought you on here to be a
Okay. Then
you haven't been pricky enough.
Okay.
Let's get the surly out.
I wanted to look at some of the people who have won overalls and are very good players and being like, is this because you have 45 teams that you're doing this? Because this does not make any sense. It doesn't. I didn't get it. Julian made more sense to me a little bit, but not Neto. Again, why do you think he's going to pop? And I don't think anybody asked that question. I really don't. I don't see how you could bid that much without asking that question. But before I speak too much, what was your take on him?
I was trepidatious. Is that a word? I feel like I went through this last
podcast. It is a word.
Podcast.
Trepidatious.
All right, great, great. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lawyer Man. I kept my bids reasonable. I needed shortstops on some teams, and I couldn't even make him. I had Rodolfo Castro over him, and
that's a good call.
And I knew that that means I just had no chance, but I think there were some leagues I went 30s and 40s. I thought maybe he might go 60s, 70s. I didn't think we'd see, you know, over 100. The funny part is, I think maybe, what would you say, a percentage of people in the percentage of people that took Neto?
I think it's Neto.
In the main event had never heard of him before, or even through draft season, DC season. Would you say like 67% maybe? Or 37? So. What's the number of people that hadn't heard of him before this?
I mean, it's got to be more. People don't – the Angels have a horrific track record with hitters in the minor leagues. And he wasn't even – I want to say he got a little bit of buzz because you could get him in the 50th round when he got some ABs. But – well, I don't know, man. He's I really hope he's going to be good. We really need it, but people are going to regret that bit. I'm almost positive about it. That it just, what was this? This was the first kind of call it mini Fabapalooza week, right? Mm-hmm. Not going in for Taj looks like the big mistake, but I don't know why those guys were bet on. I think to your point, it's kind of like, I bet you if everybody sat back and said, Rodolfo Castro is going to end up with decent power and he's going to be good. And I think everybody would agree with that, but yet nobody really bid on him. So it's shiny new toy syndrome. It's all it is.
The only problem I had with it was the fact that, well, he wasn't on my DC radar because he wasn't supposed to be up for like 2-3 years. I think that was kind of the main,
my main
problem with him. Like, I didn't even really know much. I'd heard the name, knew he was drafted, but that's it. Like, just guys that aren't going to come up for a couple of years, completely eliminated. So I don't know, but
anyway. it was a shock, but I'm glad they did it. But you're right. I mean, even before, I would want to say before he got invited to camp, he wasn't crazy high regarded as far as I want to say a fantasy bat. I don't think he ever has been. I remember when I did that Angels preview, I thought he had no chance to come up this year. I didn't even think when he came up that he was going to play shortstop because they had talked about him having better range at second than short. It really shows how desperate we are for good defense that we threw all that out the window and brought him up.
And if he plays good defense but doesn't hit much, he stays, right? Like he's...
Exactly. Yes. Okay. I think he is the full-time shortstop. And the only reason he gets sent down, in my opinion, is if the bat is so bad, meaning if the bat's not even better than Fletcher, at that point you bring Fletch back up and you mix and match. I still think that the Angels are really might want to trade for a shortstop. Hey, Oswald Peraza's out there. That'd be a great one. So let's make it happen. We can give the Yankees Ben Joyce. We can give them Kai Bush. Mm-hmm. You know, they need starters. So. That's a brilliant idea by me, by the way. Somebody should listen to that and make that.
Yes, I know. Angels Brasser, they listen to the FTN podcast and they heard that you were joining us today. Last question, because you did say that he think he's going to be a bust, but like if he plays a full season, how bad do his numbers have to be for him not to be worth it, right? Because if he's the Angels shortstop all year and, right? I mean, as long as he's not David Fletcher and you're not tempted to drop him at some point in the year,
he looks like he's going to be an accumulator. He's not a bad guy to put in your lineup. I think the only reason I was talking poorly about him, it was strictly from a Fab Capital standpoint. Other than that, to your point, I don't see any reason he can't go, 10 home runs, maybe 5 to 10 steals. I think that's a perfectly reasonable projection. The counting stats won't be there because he'll hit seventh. He may hit later if Ohapi moves up in the lineup. That's been a nice surprise. So hopefully he keeps it going because unfortunately in that Boston series, that was maybe one of the most depressing series I've ever seen the Angels. And that's saying something because last year against the Blue Jays was the most depressing series I'd ever seen. So I freaking hate them right now, but hey, they're still ahead of the Astros. So that's the way that I look at it and not get too pissed off.
Yep. Yeah. And so much more of the season to go. Let's wrap things up. Just looking ahead to some weekend series. I just wanted to mention real quick, the best matchups, at least that I found going on this weekend. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, you got Shane McClanahan and Dylan Cease and Shane Bieber versus Sandy Alcantara. And then on Sunday, Max Fried versus Christian Javier. So not a lot of like slamming matchups, right? Like super ace versus super ace, but those will work. And then just as far as weekend series is that I liked, there aren't that many like offenses like I must smash these players. Mm-hmm. But a couple that stand out, one are the Minnesota Twins facing the Washington Nationals. It'll be Trevor Williams, Chad Poole, and Patrick Corbin on the mound. That's the beginning of their 10-game homestand. They'll then follow up to face the Yankees and then Kansas City. And they're going to miss Gerrit Cole. So pretty nice schedule set up for Minnesota. This would be a time for guys like Jose Miranda, Brian Buxton to get going. And then the other one were the Phillies. Noah Davis for the Rockies. That's who they're facing, the Rockies. He had a nice debut, a really nice start a couple days ago. And then Kyle Freeland, who gave up 7 runs the next day. And then Jose Urania. Those are the 3 pitchers the Phillies are facing. And the depth on this team, man, is awful, right? Like now they lost Harper and Hoskins. And their bench is like, you know, Clemens, Garrett Stubbs, Josh Harrison, and Christian Prache. It's not getting any worse than that.
Yeah, that's they need Harper back. I kind of get the feeling that Harper's going to come back a lot quicker than people think. I mean, it's not just the little crumbs. I think to your point, they're so desperate for his bat. And he's the kind of guy that says, I want to be back. No one's going to stop him.
Makes sense.
I think he may be back before the end of June. That's kind of my gut feeling on it now.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And then looking ahead to week 5, I know it's obviously still a little bit early, but the Rangers will line up for 3 at Cincinnati and 4 versus New York. The Diamondbacks will go to Coors Field for a little series there. And there's not a lot of guys there that are worth looking at. It's way too early to be looking, I think, at Fab. But, are we really going to be bidding on Brad Miller and Robbie Grossman and Travis Jankowski?
Maybe we should. Actually, I wanted to ask you, that Texas lineup looks really, really bad. I mean, it was already bad in the back half, but do you look at Texas now as a team that is kind of a stream against them now until Seager's back?
Kind of. I mean, they're, you know, I think like for DFS purposes, I would consider, or even season long, right? I was like, I would play Brad Keller if I had him because he's facing the Rangers. It's not a very scary lineup. A bunch of one trick ponies, these, you know, Jankowskis and Bubba Thompsons of the world who can't really hit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just like except for when Marcus Semien's on one, he cannot be stopped. I think he went like,
he's streaky. And I say this kind of tongue in cheek because I think what I did this week was the combination of trying to be the smartest guy in the room, but definitely actually being the dumbest, riskiest person in the room, because I decided my staff in my main Vegas one is so bad that I started Shintaro Fujinami against Texas this week. So part of the reason I asked that question to you was to try to make myself feel better for probably making one of the stupidest moves I've ever made, at least this year. And that's already saying something. So,
and we'll make them all. I mean, like all of our pitchers would be, nobody is getting away with this year. It's going to be
except for Cole.
Yeah. And then man, the summer is going to come and it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah,
Daniel. Anything else on your mind before we close things out, or anything you want to promote or talk about?
No, I actually wanted to ask you a question. I didn't want to cut you off before when you said about the auction, because you had told me that you haven't done auctions in years on NFBC, right?
Yeah.
If you had to pick between doing a snake draft and taking the format, the funds of the mains versus the auctions, which one do you like better in the NFBC universe? Having gotten back into it.
Man, that's a really tough question. Because the drafts, I'm just used to it. But you really, and that's what we study. That's our strategy. That's like the lifeblood. And that's what, like, you're used to, but you're at the mercy of other really good players. There was a really nice feeling. It was my first time doing one in 5 years. And the last time I did it, it was with Matt Modica. We were partners. But this one, it was me, and actually Modica was in the draft against me, but I had full control of what I wanted to do. And there was some, you know, it was a really nice feeling. It's long, it's tedious. You kind of got to stay with it. But I really enjoyed the team, the process of planning it out, of building it. All of that, I think, is better. I don't never consider myself a great auction player, but that's because I haven't played much over the like a lot many years ago when I was younger, but I just, you know, I don't know, just so focused on redraft that I hadn't really given it much thought. And now that I, you know, put my mind to it, we'll see how it pans out, right? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the year, if the team doesn't work out, I'll blame, you know, I could be like, oh, auctions suck, whatever. But it was nice there for a few hours to just, you know, just get in there. And I think no matter what happens this year, I'll do it again next year. But to answer your question, I don't know yet.
What'd you say? You don't know yet?
I don't know yet. I don't know. Yeah. If I had to, I'd have to say snake because, I mean, are you asking what I prefer?
Well, no, just like I said, because I'm with you, you know, the NFBC, the snake drafts, you know, especially in the 12s, you feel so great. It's kind of a little bit of the instant gratification. It is relatively easier in terms of if you're not prepared for an auction, you're going to get destroyed. And I don't think you can say the same for a snake draft. So I asked you that because I kind of think in next year that I want to swap out snakes for auctions, at least in the biggest one. So that was partly why I asked you the question. I just thought it was interesting because nobody really talks about auctions that much.
I think we will next year for sure. Go into the next draft season for sure. Daniel, thank you so much, man, for joining me. I think, you know, you're an excellent guest. I heard you on a podcast a couple months ago on the Angels. I'm like, man, you just real polished. It's like, it was like your first one and it's been like, you've been doing it for years, but that's because, you know, you speak eloquently, you know, obviously, you know, well-trained lawyer and all that, but
I'll take a lot of credit for the endless Zoom calls or the, you know, Microsoft Teams calls, because what's funny with those is you think it's weird to kind of see yourself. I'm almost got used to it, that if I'm not like seeing myself when I'm talking, I actually get really anxious and nervous and think I'm stupid. So I never would have thought it was that way. So I think I've just, you know, got used to looking at myself and I'm like, hey, that guy's pretty smart. So, you know, helps the confidence, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that was fantastic. It was great talking to you. We'll definitely do it again sometime soon. So for Daniel Prepas, I'm Vlad Sedler on behalf of Matty Wood, Matthew Davis. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.